Okay, please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Margaret, from the Candlelight Home Group.
Hi, my name's Margaret. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Candlelight, for, I guess, lending me to this meeting tonight. So again, my name's Margaret. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February the 23rd, 2023. I have 2 years, 5 months, 2 days of sobriety. I do have a home group. It's Candlelight. It's at 8 p.m. on Colley Avenue on Friday evenings. I do have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor, and I have had the privilege of taking other women through these steps. Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me, Kyler. It's one of those things. I hope to tell you a little bit about who I am, a little bit about how I was, and a lot of bit about how I am now, because that's the good stuff. That's the blessing of the program. So I'm from Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm from, it's really funny when you start thinking about your childhood, right? And like when you're a kid, your parents seem so distant from you. Like they're so grown up and they have it all together. And they're just so very far from where you are in that time. And it's really interesting that I'm the same age as they were when they had me, and it's as I have gone through sobriety and gone through the steps, it's interesting to look back. And I love them for who they are, and I think they did the best they could, but it definitely gives you a different perspective. And it also encourages me to like maybe want to do things a little bit differently, right? I come from a middle class family. My dad was a pharmacist, my mom was a healthcare recruiter. And I think, growing up, I just was always surrounded around alcohol, and I just thought that that's kind of what people did, right? Like, my mom drank wine every night, my dad always had whiskey every night, all the time, and to give you, like, a little bit of a perspective, he was in a fraternity, he's from the South, and that kind of lifestyle just never changed, right? Every year they all went on huge vacations with all the fraternity brothers and essentially got wasted for a week, and all the kids were just like, we survived, you know what I mean? And so, Disney World was full of mini bottles, it was always a party, always an event, always something going on, and that was just such a normal part of our life. And I think how it really impacted or affected me is that they were so checked out that the only way to gain recognition or attention or anything at all was to demand it, almost, right? Was to get certain grades or do something in sports or just be that crazy of a mongrel running around that it demanded some kind of attention because they're so checked out. I remember being 4 years old and I like, no one was paying attention to me, and I just grabbed we were at dinner at a Japanese restaurant, and I grabbed sake and I shot it back and I like slammed it on the ground and I was like, I like it. I think as I grew up and got a little bit older, that conditional love really was reinforced, right? And so coming from a family who has a lot of expectations on your grades and athletics, and the only time you felt seen was if you were doing something deserving of being seen. Because all that mattered was alcohol. All that mattered was she was going to drink 2 bottles of wine every night. And all that mattered was, unfortunately, he got addicted to pills in the 90s, and he was a pharmacist who had an unending supply of them. And when they divorced when I was 8, my mom's drinking progressively got worse. My dad's drug use and alcohol progressively got worse, right? I think I took my first drink. I was 14 years old, and my mom was really, really checked out at this point, and I drank an entire bottle of Crown Royal. Like, my first drink was a drink of Crown Royal, and within an hour, it was one, and then another, and then another. And mind you, I'd never had a drop of alcohol in my life, right? And I puked all over myself, and I like threw up on the grass, and my friend's mom had to take me home, and I think I threw up on my mom. It's really not a fun experience, right? And what do you think I did the very next weekend, right? Actually, to be honest, my mom shipped me off to my dad's house, and he, you know, yelled at me and attempted to discipline me. My mom's form of discipline, if she was sober enough to actually pay attention or care, was to like threaten to take my phone away, but never actually do anything about it. Throughout the high school period, the kind of the constant repeat would be, you know, right around 8, 9, 10 o'clock, she'd get home from whatever event or function. She would be pretty drunk by that point. By 10, I knew she was going to pass out. I could take her upstairs, get her Tylenol, put her PJs on, and I was out of the house. I just knew I had to be back before 4, 5, 6 a.m. if I was sober enough to remember to come home, which wasn't always the case. 14 to 19 was probably when my drinking was most destructive. You know, you stole my thunder with chapter 3, believe it or not. But, you know, I was reading and reflecting, and a couple highlights that stick out to me. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. They tried to, and then the other one was on page 31. Many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe that they're in that class. They will try to prove themselves exception to the rule. And it talks about, on page 32, once he started, he had no control, whatever. You know, going back to that proving yourself and proving love, I was always really good at making my life seem okay on paper, right? I got one B in the fourth grade, and my dad sat me down and he told me how disappointed he was in me. And he told me that he never wanted to see that again because he knew that I was better than that. And that my value, my worth was like determined by a grade, right? So on paper, you know, through my teens, it looked as though president of the Marathon Club, triple sport athlete, 11 AP classes, 4.75 out of 5.0 GPA, right? Like, it looked like I had it together, but in reality, I was in so much pain. And Sunday through Thursday, I worked really hard. I always had the saying, like, work hard, play hard. And then, you know, Thursday through Sunday, good luck. I'm surprised I'm not dead. For me, in this type of alcoholic that I am, the second I have a drink, just one, just a sip even, something changes in me. My sister calls it like the devil comes out in my eyes. She says, just get this look, and it's kind of like, you know, you get you're just not who God intended you to be. Not three drinks, not four drinks, one drink does that to me. And there was many times where I think I can count from 14 to 21, maybe on two hands, if I'm really trying hard, how many times I didn't black out. So my form of drinking, I was an excessive binge drinker. It was almost a challenge for me to how fast can I, you know, black out? How fast can I drink 20 shots of Fireball? There's no off switch for me. And it's extremely dangerous. There were days where I'd end up in homes I didn't know, with people I didn't know, in different cities. Ended up in Florida when I was 16. You know, they're just like really dangerous things and dangerous situations that I put myself in. And so my drinking made me the worst version of myself. And then when I sobered up the next day, I would fight tooth and nail to prove to everyone else that I was actually the best version of myself. And then every single weekend, this insanity would just continue. I'm not going to talk about all the trauma, but use your imagination what a teenage girl can get herself into in really dangerous situations with no adult oversight, right? you know, I think it was a huge blessing for me. I was 16, I think, and I get this phone call from a Navy recruiter. And I was in the McDonald's parking lot. I remember right now. It was like 2008. And they asked me, hey, are you going to college? By the way, when I was 16, my mom decided that she was going to cut me off. So I had bought my car. I was paying for my phone. I was still living under her roof. We were essentially roommates. I had an older sister. She had moved out at that time. My mom would occasionally we would see each other, but it was a very much like roommate type situation. She would threaten to take my keys and my phone away. And I was like, what, bitch, the one that I bought? And so I get a call that, you know, how are you going to pay for college? I said, I don't know, student loans. And they said, well, have you ever considered the United States Navy? And I was like, absolutely fucking not. No one in my family was in the military. It's my great grandfather. I think he was a pharmacist for 2 years. And so they said, well, you know, how do you feel about a full ride scholarship? And at that point I knew that I was expected to go to college, but I was going to be paying for it. So I walked into this recruiter's office, signed some paperwork, was like, yeah, sure, this sounds great. Like, I would love free school. That's exactly what sounds great to me at this time. Fast forward, you know, a year later, I got a full ride scholarship to North Carolina State, which is for engineering. And I remember I baked a cake for my recruiters and took it over to the recruiting office with a thank you card, with the icing, and I put it in front, and no one was there, so I just left it. If you ever thought about leaving an inanimate object in front of a recruiting office and then walking away, 10 out of 10 don't recommend. Army comes out, they're like, force protection, they're like circling the cake, and I'm like running up from my Kia Sportage, you know, and like freaking pigtails. And I'm like, and they're like, stay back, stay back. And I'm like, it's my cake. That didn't go over well. Yeah. Showed up to boot camp at 18. Mind you, I had just done cocaine for like a week straight. Again, you work hard, you play hard, you know what I mean? And so I was like not the ideal candidate, besides the fact that I looked really good on paper. I had a great GPA, I had great recommendations. Triple sport athlete. Oh, did you know that I'm also a menace to fucking society? No, of course you don't. I'm a Gemini. I felt like I was living these two lives, like president of the Envirothon Club, but also like I didn't fit in anywhere. I had like all these like nerdy ass hobbies, and like I hung out with like the worst scum of society, I didn't do math, but you know what I mean? Just like. Like, I had no business being in the back of that vehicle, like, in the middle of the ghetto at 15 years old, right? So, show up to boot camp with, like, makeup and a hair straightener, like, that did not go over well whatsoever. Gunnery sergeant spitting in my face, all the good things. I would come to find out the military for someone like me was actually really incredible. I had a lot of energy that I needed to be focused to something. My A-type personality, so the dedication and discipline of the military was really good to channel some of that energy that I had, right? But the problem with the Navy is they drug test you, and the problem with the military is that you have to be up at 4 or 5 in the morning every single day your freshman year. Some of those was doing lines before PT, you know? And so I had this whole premise, I worked really hard Monday through Friday, and then I was a complete disaster through the weekend. And I'd sober up just enough to come, squeak my way through, right? And of course, in true Margaret fashion, I excelled. I excelled in college. I got an incredibly high GPA and an incredibly difficult engineering major. While just doing really awful, terrible things. And it was funny because my senior year, the commanding officer and the XO asked us all to rank all of our peers. And I got service selected to be a pilot. I was just I was the kind of person that, and it says it in chapter 2, all in all, they could be a really good, reasonable, nice successful person until they're drinking, right? So my peers ranked me 16 out of 17. And the staff sat me down and said, "Margaret, we're really confused." I said, "What's going on, sir?" And he, you know, sat me down and he looked at the superior's rankings, and they had ranked me 2 out of 17. And my peers ranked me 16 out of 17. And he says, "We're really just confused. We don't understand some of this feedback." And the feedback was controlling, impatient, doesn't take direction well, doesn't listen to others, thinks she knows everything, not a team player, scary, you know, all those things. And, you know, they also knew that I was living a lie, right? That XO, the 06 and the 05, they didn't know who I was when I wasn't wearing the uniform. And that really was a complete disgrace, because a Navy officer is supposed to have integrity in and out of the uniform. And it's supposed to be a certain way, regardless of who's around and who's watching. And that's just not the life I lived. I did what I needed to do in front of who I needed to do. I said what I needed to say to get what I wanted out of life. And I did that to people. I knew what to say, how to say it, to get what I wanted out of my life, regardless of whether it was good for you or not. I feel really bad for a lot of my boyfriends, essentially my entire adult life, until this last one. I just wasn't a considerate person, especially when it came to my goals and getting things done, right? So I go to flight school, I'm 20, well, I'll look back a little bit. I decide to get into this thing called bodybuilding when I was 21. And my coach sat me down and said, "You know, you're gonna have to stop drinking for the show." And I was like, "I can do that, because I'm a bench drinker, you know, I just get blackout every weekend." So it was January of 2013. I'm coming off a 3 or 4 day bender at this point. And then January 1st, 2014, that was when I started my show prep, and I didn't drink. That was the first time in, I guess, 6-7 years at this point, where I went longer than 7 days without drinking. So in 7 years, I had not gone longer than 5 to 7 days without completely blacking out and destroying lots of things in my life. And some interesting things happened. I started to see a different side of myself. But all that energy was still put into something, right? I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was doing 2 hours of cardio, I was eating 700 calories a day, I was taking 22 hours in college, I was really pushing myself in a lot of different ways, but I wasn't drinking. And it was the first time in my life that I'd had any kind of sense of stability without alcohol, right? But I was putting all that energy into something else. And so for the next, from 21, essentially to 28, I use bodybuilding shows as a way to channel that energy and stay away from alcohol. I remember being 22 years old at flight school and wasn't training for a show at that point. It was still in 2014. And I went out to the bar and I said, you know, because I already made a fool. I think I'd kicked down my door the first week, blacked out in a taxi and almost got in trouble the second or third week. And so the fourth week, I don't know these people. These aren't my friends. These are other naval officers that you're all competing against, and all of them really want you to fail, right? And I was like, I'm only going to have 2 vodka Red Bulls tonight. That's it. Just 2. So I had the 1, and then I had the 2, and then I said, all right, I'm going to stop. And I just had these, like, I started breaking out hives, and I started getting so anxious, because for me, I need to get outside of my body. I need to lose control. For someone who's so controlled and so rigid in her life all the time, I had to get outside of myself. And I ended up getting an Uber home. I ran 3 miles to the closest gas station because I wasn't going to get a DUI. I got two Four Locos and a Mad Dog 40 and drank them in a pack of cigarettes and drank them on the way back. And that's when I knew I had a problem. And instead of going to AA or asking for help, I signed up for another show the next day. And I repeated that cycle for a lot of years. I'd end up having a couple changes in careers, from being a pilot to a civil engineer. And the way my life looked was I would train for a show for 6 or 8 months, and then I would drink for 1 to 3 weeks, lose my shit, and then repeat that cycle. I also thought that Tony Robbins was going to solve all my problems. I read a lot of Brené Brown books. I was really good at the whole therapy. I'm healed. I'm going to join 2 women's groups and a Bible study and volunteer and do all this church thing. Like, I was grasping at that point for some solution that wasn't actually the solution, right? Because my drinking is but a symptom of the problem, which is me. And in my 20s, I was able to accomplish a lot. I started buying houses, I started a business, I was being very successful in my career. And so on paper, it looked good. On paper, it looked like my life was managed. But if you were actually in me, it looked as though I wasn't seeing my family. My, you know, if you are not helping me get where I want to go, get on my train or get them out of my way. I was very self-centered. I was very self-serving. I was extremely controlling and impatient, and I just was pretty miserable to be around. And my sister, I talked to her, I don't know, once a year, because she's not like me, and she's some hippie bitch who's living out of the country, and, you know, my dad always said, oh, what do your daughters do? Oh, well, you know, my sister's building schools, or my oldest daughter builds schools in third world countries, and my youngest daughter, well, she blows them up. She was in the Peace Corps for a little while, so very indicative of my sister. We're pretty much polar opposites. I didn't mention it, but this disease did take my dad's life at age 50 when I was 18. And I use that as an excuse. I got wasted at his funeral. Made a real ass of myself. My white uniform looking all, you know. I remember standing up there being like, I'm gonna make my dad so proud, you know. And I just always had a chip on my shoulder. I felt like I had to prove myself that I was valuable. I had to prove that I was gonna be the best at whatever the fuck it was I was doing at the time, to be worthy of love, to be worthy of anything. And I was so wrapped up in this whole like value-based system of success that I really like missed the beauty of life and the people in it who I think really make the difference, right? When I was 28, I decided, hey, I've been dry for a while. I think I drank, I don't know, 5 or 6 times in the last 5 or 6 years. I met someone who drank, and I said, I deserve to be normal. I deserve to go out and like try this drinking thing again. That was in 2020. We were only drinking maybe once or twice a month, but every time we did, it was pretty horrible. Every time we did, it was a fight or an 8-ball or really dangerous situations. He was also an awful human being. And fast forward about a year, we decided to get married on our 1-year anniversary, which is always the best idea, especially when you're drunk. And that lasted 4 months, ended with me in the hospital because of his actions, with a broken jaw, broken nose, and 50 stitches in my face. And it also put me in a really bad place. And the only thing I had was my career. I was still an officer in the military, as a lieutenant. And in 2021, my drinking went from once or twice a month to once or twice a week, to 3 times a week, to 4 times a week, to 5 times a week, to 7 days a week in 6 months. And for someone who's a binge drinker and has never felt physically addicted to alcohol, my problem was I just couldn't stop. My problem was I was a menace to society when I had alcohol. So if I can just stay away from it long enough, it'll be fine. What I didn't expect was to start drinking every day and to drive home and just try to get home without turning around at the gas station, and then getting home and then getting to the gas station 5 minutes before they close to get another 12-pack that night. So my mom told me in January of 2022, after I ruined a family vacation, as one does, you get wasted at dinner and they lose me on the gondola in, you know, Telluride, Colorado, and I drink all the alcohol in the house before they get home. mom, she goes, you need to go to rehab. And I said, I am a below zone, 04 select. I just got a brand new job in Washington, D.C., working for Admiral. I don't have time for fucking rehab. You don't know what you're talking about. And I don't have a problem. And I don't need help. 2 weeks later, at a command event, that girl who doesn't have a problem would subsequently lose the career that she worked 15 years to build. No promotion, no job, was being investigated for 2 felony charges, and everything I had known was subsequently taken away from me by my own actions, right? And so at that point, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was 30 years old. I just worked 15 years since I was 18 or 12 years or whatever it is for this career. And if you would ask me who you are, I said, I'm a naval officer. No, not what you do, who you are. That is who I am. So the Navy said you should go to SARP, right? It'll look good for your court case. Fine, I'll go to rehab. And part of SARP is that you have to go to an AA meeting every day. So I moved to Norfolk, into one of our rental houses, because I'd acquired 5 by this point. And I was like, this is so stupid. I'm going to have to go to an AA meeting. And I'd tried meetings before. Every time I got a DUI or got arrested, which that was sprinkled throughout my story. And I would go for a couple meetings, and I'd usually get to chapter 3, and I'd read more about alcoholism, and I would relate in that I would be like, nope, not for me. Because I cannot fathom never drinking for the rest of my life. So, as one does, I decided that I needed to study AA before I had to go for this rehab program. So I walked into the Thursday night meeting, young adults, and it's February 23rd, and I had been to AA probably 10 times. I never picked up a white chip, and I picked up a white chip that night. And I heard something that sounded like, for someone who never felt like she fit in, for someone who never fit in her wardroom, and never fit in with her smart friends, and never fit in with her athletic friends, and was so misunderstood by everyone, I heard stories from people who were so different than me, and they were telling my story. And they were telling me that, hey, I can't put it down, or I've done this, or I feel this overwhelming anxiety to black out or do these things, but there's a solution, right? So I think step one for me, it was always really hard for me to admit my life was unmanageable, because on paper, I managed it pretty well. In chapter 2, a line that really stuck out to me when I was reading it last week, I mean, talk about sobering, and there is a solution. Give me 1 second, I didn't. Oh, on page 18. But not so with alcoholic illness, for with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. So it didn't matter what I had on paper, it didn't matter how many houses I had, or what rank I was, or what I thought I was. I was going to annihilate everything good in my life, every relationship, every family, if alcohol was going to be a part of that story. It was really hard for me to admit. I am someone who is very controlling and very A-type, and I think I have a plan for everything. And so for me to admit my life's unmanageable and that I need help, I'm not someone who asks for help, ever. And after my father died, I stepped into my family as the leader of my family and as the people, as the person, everyone. I mean, I'm every single person in my family's emergency contact, if that, like, tells you anything. So asking for help for me wasn't really something I was comfortable with. But I think at that point in my life, everything I knew, I had just lost my house, my job. I was glad to lose the piece of shit guy, but I didn't have anything else to lose, right? I was just starting over, and so I asked for help. And this girl just walks up to me, and she is now my sponsor 2 years later, and she was like, Hi, my name's Nicole. You're new here, but this isn't your first time here. You're way too, you know, comfortable. Little did you know, I was like still really hungover and like shaking. And I told her, I said, I have white claws at the house. And she's like, what are you gonna do with them? I said, well, I put them outside for the homeless people. She was like, you're gonna go home and pour those out. And I did. And that was day one. And then I kept coming back. And I came back to Candlelight on day two. And then Cornerstone on day three. And Military Veterans on day four and day five. And just kept doing it. And it took me a while to get, and I say to get, we're never gonna graduate. I'm never gonna get a gold star for sobriety, right? Like, if we think we've arrived, we need to get back into the book, right? You know, if I'm so grateful for all the things that it took to get me here, and if you were gonna create a really, like, say you're God and you're gonna create a really awesome human, like, what are you gonna put them through? If you want to make them have patience, are you gonna give them everything? You know, it's work. I think there's so much purpose in all of our pain. I think there's so much in our stories that can help others and that can share. And so I never wanna look back at my past and say, like, oh, I'm dirty or I'm wrong or I was bad or any of these things. I've done a lot of really bad things. I've hurt a lot of people. But I also know that gives me the opportunity to help a lot of people as well. For me, I used to abuse religion. I used to wear it as a badge of honor and make an Instagram story every day and tell people how amazing Jesus was. So the God thing for me wasn't a foreign concept, but doing the God thing with actual humility, with actual grace, not just this like toxic social media, look at me, I'm a believer, I'm a Christian, I'm better than you, right? Like doing the God thing without a denomination behind it, right? Like the God thing for me now, I was just driving over here today and I was just praying. I was like, just God, like, let me say one thing that makes sense to somebody. Let me just embody some humility today in work. Let me just help one person, right? I've forced a lot of things and I do a lot of things alcoholically. And I think the principles of the program have really helped to, I hate the word balance. I still struggle with that. It's something I still really struggle with. But I think the principles of these program have just allowed me to be a little less, and I don't mean less than. I think just, I feel like I used to suck all of the energy out of the room. You know what I mean? And I just want to be even keel. I just want to be enough and be sturdy and be stable and be someone that people do come to, but they trust. So it wasn't difficult for me to believe in a God, and it wasn't difficult for me to be ready to ask him to change for me, but I think it was pretty, I mean, it took me a good 6 months to really, like, start to level out. And I don't mean, you know, I literally bought a house, renovated a house, got a new job, was in rehab, and moved in the first 3 months of sobriety. 10 out of 10, don't recommend. But I think for me, what really started to level a lot of things out is the people in my life. I met like really amazing partner, and I felt like that sense of stability, I think getting rid of social media, not posting, not, and I told my therapist, I said, you know, what if I don't post this stuff in my story, like, it's not gonna matter. And she was like, yeah, you're right, it's not gonna matter. And I'm like, no, anything I'm doing is not going to matter if no one sees it, right? And that was the issue, that like, the things I was doing weren't because I think that they were good or because I even wanted to do them. It's because I thought that I was going to get that validation from others from it. So I think slowly but surely, you know, the first year was a lot of just like learning and growing. And I had really amazing women in the program who supported me. And I was looking over my character defects from step five and looking at dishonesty, honesty, egoism, modesty, the opposite actions, what I'm reading, conceit, true humility, selfishness, selflessness, self-seeking, service to others, intolerance to tolerance, impatience to patience, condemnation to accepting, self-reliance to reliant, perfectionism to easygoing. That one's pretty hard for me still. and controlling to relinquishing control. And I just remember talking to my sponsor and I read honesty, humility, service, tolerance, patience, accepting, reliance. And I just felt like every single one of those triggered my survival instincts, right? Like, my default is grind, work harder. If you can look up, you can get up. No one's gonna save you. You're in this alone. Do more, be more, outwork whatever's going on in your life. Honesty wasn't safe. My motto in high school was love yourself and give yourself praise because no one else will. Be your own champion. Crush others. Be better than others. All of those things. What does life look like when you give those up? Perhaps it looks like a life not in survival mode. I would love to say that I'm not controlling today. I would love to say that I don't have perfectionism tendencies, but like that's just a lie. Like, I still have these defects and I still struggle with them. And but I do feel like today I have a job that I love. I get to lead people and I have a job that I get to help people. I have a sister I talk to every single day on the phone. I have an incredible partner who I couldn't be more excited to spend my life with, who's also in the program. I feel like I can love my mom and show up for her even though she is still, I mean, this disease is killing her, right? I don't know how much longer she has, but I can just be here for her with the time that she does have. I can, at the end of the night, look at my partner and, you know, if we've said or done something, I can, it usually doesn't even wait to the end of the night. It's usually immediately. Taking ownership, taking accountability, saying I love you and meaning it. I tell someone I'm going to be here on Friday, like I'm going to be here on Friday. I still raise my hand to too many things. I still struggle with balance, but I think that I'm so grateful that God has given me people in my life that will love me regardless of what I do or what I don't do. And I've been put in a position where I do get to impact and lead others. It might not be sailors. I have been fortunate enough to go back and to watch several of my sailors go through this program and go through SARP and show them that, you know, there is a way out, right? And hopefully they don't make the same mistake with their careers I did. I don't know what's next, but I know these last 2.5 years were significantly better than all of the years drinking. You know, people say like, oh, you know, something bad didn't happen every time I drank, but every time, you know, but everything, something bad happened, I was drinking. That, like, I was not that lucky. Like, literally pretty much every single time I drank, something terrible happened. and I still did it every weekend. That's the insanity of this disease, right? I haven't lost a phone in like 3 years, right? Like, I haven't crashed a car, like been arrested. Like, it's just great. You know, I haven't worried about, and you know what's really funny, because I was talking to someone this weekend, and I said, you know, it's really ironic that I get a job where I'm not drug tested and I'm sober. Like, God is a funny way of, you know, figuring that out. You know, man, life's good. It's so much better. It looks a lot different these days, and I still have a lot of work to do, and I'm just grateful that I have people in my life that I get to work with and work for and work on. And my prayers typically involve, and I was thinking this morning, because I used to journal every day, every morning. I would incessantly journal about all the shit, all my emotions, all the things, all this. I would pour all this stuff onto these pages. And I look today, and I haven't journaled since May. And then before that was April, and like, it's interesting. So my first year of sobriety, I journaled every day, and then slowly but surely it got less and less. And I was saying, like, wow, like, am I just lazy? Am I just doing less? Like, am I just disconnected? And I don't think that's it. I think that I just had less shit to pour onto the pages. And that's a good thing, you know? Like, our Fridays and Saturdays are some movies and a cheat meal. Maybe you can go out to the movies if you're feeling, you know, real sassy. So I just, you know, life looks a lot different, and I love it, and I think it's great. And, you know, I feel like I finally beat a lot of my addictions. Men, nicotine, like, drinking, like, social media. Like, I've been addicted to a lot of stuff. And I feel like I'm free of that now. And I know that if I keep coming back and I keep calling my sponsor and I keep in these rooms and I just keep doing the work, it's given me a great 2.5 years, and I'm excited to, you know, see what else is to come. But that's all I got. Yeah.
Thank you again, Margaret. That was fantastic. Otherwise, I spend